It is Mackling and McGarry. Might be seeing some fog, by the way, where you are. It's a little foggy in the streets of downtown Winnipeg. Which could mean that out in the open, more fog. Feel free to let us know at 204-780-6868 on our text line. And speaking of texts, GMAC, Saturday afternoon.
Yes.
And I shoot my friend Sean a text message.
Why would you text Sean?
Sean Angus, my buddy Sean, he's a fan of the Colorado Avalanche.
I see.
So I happened to send him a text just saying, hey, buddy.
Just thinking about you.
Just randomly checking in to see how you're doing. And he responds saying, I'm sure the timing of this message is purely coincidental. The Jets were in the process of hammering the Colorado Avalanche. It was 4-0 at that point. Needless to say, he was none too impressed with the final score.
When was the time previous that you had just checked in on your friend Sean?
It's been a while.
Well done. Well played, Brett McGarry. I'm glad to see you getting in on the fun, as Saturday afternoon was something the Jets had never, ever done before. Scored 7 goals in a row in any game.
Oh, wow.
Under any circumstance. They're now 6-for-6 in games in April. They've scored 27 goals. They've surrendered just 10. And, well, why don't we listen to 7 goals in 59 seconds?
Captured again by Ehlers. Back in behind the net. Back door on the far side. And a shot. They score! Sean Monahan. Connor the hash. Back door. And a shot. They score! Gabriel Vilardi on the far side. It's a power play goal. The draw. Morsi slap shot from the point. He scores! And the Jets are 2-for-2 with the man advantage, and they have a unthinkable 3-0 lead in 4 now. A shot, they score! Lowry back to the way, partial 2-on-1. Far side, a shot, they score! Tyler Toffoli. Monahan out of his own zone. He'll play it ahead now. Joining the rush is Morsi across the line. Back from Monahan, moving right in, shoots and scores! Sean Monahan. Lowry speeding down the left wing boards, moving in, shoots, and he scores! 7-0 Winnipeg.
That happened so quickly, I got caught with a sip of water in my mouth. Well done, Jets. It was a game that really meant a lot to Winnipeg because it locked in the fact that the Jets will play Colorado. All that's left to decide is who will gain home ice advantage. The Jets clearly have the advantage in deciding that. All they need now, based on an Avalanche lost in overtime yesterday to Vegas, they in fact, Brett, they had a 3-0 lead heading into the third period against Vegas.
No.
Yes, so they fell 4-3. And so that means the Jets need just 1 point in their final 2 games or for Vegas to not get any more points. And then the Jets are in second place. Seattle Kraken here tomorrow night. Canucks Thursday. Playoffs begin Saturday, and a lot of people are asking me, when are we going to get when's going to be game one? Well, I don't know. But if I'm making a prediction, Toronto and Edmonton likely to get the Saturday games this weekend, which mean the Jets and the Canucks would likely get the games on Sunday.
Okay.
So that, once again, purely a prediction, purely speculative. But if you're using your reasoning hat, that's probably the way things go for the playoffs, at least this weekend.
All right. So we've got our Monday Kelly Moore Jets report at 7:55. Jim Toth will join us at 8:35 to talk Jets and other sports from the weekend. Cameron Porteous, of course, has sports at 25 after the hour. And then Jim and Cam will have more hockey on Jets at noon. So that was sensational on Saturday afternoon. Should just very quickly mention, and we'll get more into the why was I downtown at 6:35. But we spoke to Loren last week. She did that piece teeing up. It was 6:35. Was that on Thursday we had Loren on? Yes, 6:35 on Thursday if you missed it. Just a wonderful feature from Loren McNabb on the Manitoba Archives building because they had an open house on Friday afternoon and Saturday afternoon. So I popped in, just wanted to say hello to meet the people that Loren spoke with. And I wanted to see the big, as Loren put it, the yoga map the huge map of Winnipeg that they had laid out, and it was lying out so that it could relax.
Right.
So it could lie flat. And Loren said, what, like yoga? So it was just really neat. I got to see that big old map of Winnipeg.
And how big was it, Brett?
It was like at least 6 feet across, if not eight. It was big. And then they also had that river map that showed the Oxbow, which is now Enfield Crescent, which Loren and I didn't know. You knew that was a thing. We didn't know that.
Which is, it's only a goofy reason why I know it. It comes out of golf.
Yeah.
Actually, a good friend of mine who I'd golfed with a couple times at St. B, we had noticed a little bit of a hump in a couple of the fairways. And so finally I just asked, what is that? Oh, there's a story there. And he had worked for the provincial government. And so then he showed us this map and an Enfield. All that came up in terms of the geography of St. Boniface back in the day. A train track and then the fact that Enfield Crescent was a creek once upon a time. So just goofy why I know that.
Yeah, and it was cool actually. I bumped into one of our frequent contributors, Brent Bellamy, who is an architect and an urbanist and a columnist and a booster for Winnipeg, and just quickly bumped him into him on the way out. And we just kind of looked at each other and he said, maps. So, yeah, it was cool. It was exciting. I didn't have time to stick around, but it was really neat to finally poke my head into the archives building. So thanks to the hospitality shown by the staff. But I mentioned in our last half hour that I was downtown over the weekend on Saturday afternoon, so I decided to pop into the open house at the Manitoba Archives building, which is at the corner of Vaughan and St. Mary. And part of the reason why it was so convenient for me to do that this weekend is because Saturday morning, I was on location doing a remote, as we call it in the business, just down the street, like right down the street off of Vaughan at 430 Webb Place at a place called Fred Douglas Chateau. And it's a life lease building for those 55 or better. And we can talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But they had an open house and they were inviting people to come take a look, take a tour, see the suites, potentially make a significant living change in their life. And I wanted to expand on this and have a conversation about perception when it comes to downtown as it pertains to safety, for one, but also lifestyle, because one of the things that I love, and I've been going to Fred Douglas Chateau now, formerly Kiwanis Chateau, for I think over 10 years. I've been there at least five times, if not six times. And I love going there because the people there are all so happy. It's such a wonderful community. But this weekend struck me in particular, maybe I just needed a reminder that it's not all doom and gloom downtown, particularly for those who live downtown.
Anytime we discuss the downtown, even when the Jets were having the conversation about their attendance woes and the drop in attendance, which has dramatically increased and turned itself around, by the way, over the last several months, it would not be long before we would be getting text messages. Oh, it's a safety issue downtown. Nobody wants to go downtown. Nobody wants to live downtown. Why are they investing so much money in downtown? Nobody wants to be there. Is that true? I don't know.
And based like this open house in particular, like I said, I've done these a number of times. This was by far and away the busiest I've ever seen. Like it was packed. It was packed. It was like a party in there. So in my cut-ins for the on-location, I spoke with a number of residents, and I just wanted to share some of their feedback, starting with Deb Salveson. One of the things, Deb, that I find really reassuring is the many residents I've spoken to in the last couple of weeks here all say the same thing, and that it's you feel safe.
Yes, I do. Very much so. I'm 65-plus years old. I'm a lady, and I walk around with a cane, and I've never ever been accosted or beyond asked for money, which happened in Tuxedo when I lived there, and it happened in St. James when I lived there. So I've never been happier than moving downtown.
Cheryl Butler, and Cheryl, I know one of the things that you love is the fact that this building, particularly in our winter city, that this building is connected to the downtown concourse and skywalk system.
Yes, I've been living here now for 12 years, and my decision to move here 12 years ago was just having the ability to get out of my unit and be able to get out to shop and walk without having to contend with winter conditions.
Michelle Hammerling, and Michelle, you were telling me that the thing you really like about this place is convenience.
Convenience. It's just everything is so close. You can do without a car if you like. The other thing that I noticed right from the get-go moving in was how friendly, warm, and welcoming the whole community is in this building. We like to do participate in the arts, and so we found ourselves able to walk to the concert hall, the theater center. We have banking, shopping, all kinds of stores that you don't even have to set foot out in the winter. And let's face it, half our year is kind of like winter. And so the network of walkways here is, I hate to admit it, but I didn't know it existed until I moved here.
We just heard from resident Michelle Hammerling. Husband Eric is now here. And Eric, what do you like about Fred Douglas Chateau?
Two things that really stand out for me. One is the sense of community in this building. The people are wonderful. Our social life has expanded incredibly. The second thing is that the convenience factor. We got rid of our second car when we moved from the suburbs. I can get anywhere I want by bus within 20 minutes or so. It was a real eye-opener for me.
So that's just a sample of what I learned from the residents at Fred Douglas Chateau over the weekend. But the consistent thing was they all feel safe, not just in the building, which is a secure building, but they feel safe downtown. It's the convenience. It's the quality of life. I mean, for gosh sakes, one of the residents, a lovely woman named Rose, is 100 years old. And this is not an assisted living. It's not a care facility. It's independent living. Right. And they all love it. But this is just a snapshot. One of our listeners, Jeff, recently moved into 300 Main. Loves it. Says it was a dream of his to have that kind of a lifestyle. We've spoken to someone else who I think had a house in Tyndall Park. I can't remember the neighborhood. Doesn't matter. But they sold their house. True North Square. Yeah.
Yes. So we'd love to hear from those folks, because I think so often we get caught up in the headlines. Yes, we know we deliver some of those headlines, but we would love to hear from you. 204-780-6868. No, not the poo-pooing downtown if you don't live downtown. That's easy. That's shooting fish in a barrel. Low-hanging fruit, some will call it. Want to hear from people who enjoy living downtown, people who have moved downtown. Why have you done so? And Brett, and correct me if I misconstrued what you said, but you've been doing, as you mentioned, you've been doing these remotes for about a decade now, as busy as you've ever seen it.
Yeah.
Over the weekend,
yeah.
In terms of people coming down to check it out.
For sure. I think that the open house went until 3. I was there until 1, and I'm sure at least 50 people came through the door.
Wow.
And that's more, usually it's maybe half of that. So yeah, there's clearly a desire to make a change and make downtown. And another thing that I forgot to share is the excitement over some of the big changes that are coming. What's happening with the Bay Building? What's happening with Portage Place? You know, they want to be part of helping to transform our downtown. And like Greg said, please feel free to weigh in at 204-780-6868. And by the way, if you want more information on Fred Douglas Place, just go to that's the neighboring building. Fred Douglas Chateau is where I was. But you can find information on that online as well. I knew I would get that wrong sooner or later. I was wondering all day Saturday, am I saying Fred Douglas Chateau or Fred Douglas Place? Did I say Fred Douglas? I finally did. I finally blew it.
So those are two different buildings.
Yeah, but they're right next door to each other.
Got it.
But Fred Douglas Chateau is where I was. So we got a question for you as it pertains to something Mackling was doing over the weekend. What did you find in your hands, Greg?
Ah, my pressure washer, my trusty old, I don't know how many PSI it is. Doesn't really matter. All I know is it does a fantastic job of getting the grit and the grime from the winter season off of the various pieces of furniture that might have got stuck outside or even inside the gazebo. They got dust on it. The patio needs to be sprayed down. And one of the boys came out and said, "Hey, Dad, can I try that? That looks like fun." I'm like, "Be my guest, boy." And he says, "Oh, this is oddly satisfying." I'm like, "It really is." And so we were turning over chairs and spraying them from the front and then the back and then spraying the front again. And you could see the dirt coming off in the pattern. Like I already watched these videos of people detailing their cars. And so now I really started to enjoy doing that myself, but it's just oddly satisfying, to borrow the phrase from Brendan from yesterday, just to see the pressure washer do its magic. Okay. So we don't always like chores. So I thought I'd ask this morning, which chore do you find, we'll put it in quotation marks, oddly satisfying?
204-780-6868. Shoot us a text. Up for grabs for our prizing today, with which we like to bribe you to tell us your stories. We have one of two. We have a pair of tickets to see Star Wars, A New Hope in concert at the Centennial Concert Hall on Friday, May the 3rd. And they've also got a show on Star Wars Day, Saturday, May the 4th. These are sold out shows, so you can't get tickets anywhere else. We also have a pair of tickets to check out All Elite Wrestling, AEW, at Canada Life Center on Wednesday, May 1st. So Cameron Poitras, why don't we start with you, sir?
Well, it's Passover's coming up very, very shortly. So doing some spring cleaning at the house. Got out the duster. I haven't dusted in a while. My wife has kind of been taking care of that. But I got the Swiffer out, the little Swiffer duster. I kind of enjoyed it. I kind of enjoyed wiping down all the surfaces and stuff like that and picking everything up. So let's not make a habit of it, Sky. I mean, you can take care of that. I don't mind. But
once in a while?
Once in a while, I can do it. Yeah.
I hate it. I hate dusting. Can't stand it.
Use an old bounce sheet. Use bounce.
The Dyson's kind of fun too. We got a Dyson. I inherited that from my dad. So I'm like, bam.
Have you seen the one with the laser beam on it?
Oh no, this isn't. I'm not that advanced.
I'm just saying. I'm just asking.
What
if
is
you've
that
seen
like $6,000 or something?
My dad bought one of those and he loves it. Absolutely loves it. He vacuums in the dark because that little green laser beam, like, it shows you every single little dust particle. And he vacuums in the dark.
Is this like a full size vacuum? Or is
no, it's like one of the little Dysons. It's a tiny little vacuum.
Yeah, the handheld Dysons.
The stick?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, Forte, I know you're a self proclaimed clean freak. So, what's the chore that you find oddly satisfying?
I was gonna say, I don't even do this chore act, but I do watch it online sometimes. There's a guy who goes up to people's houses whose grass and yards are really, really thick, and he goes up to the house and says, "Hey, do you mind if I cut your yard for free? I'm just doing it for a YouTube video." And they go, "Sure, have at it." And this guy, like, he gets like all the ridges and everything, and he makes it nice and clean, and it's so satisfying to watch this. Like, trust me, I would hate doing the yard work myself, but I find it satisfying to watch someone else do it.
He does all the edging right down the edges of the sidewalks and along the road or the public sidewalk, and like, these are overgrown horrible yards, and by the time he's done, so
beautiful.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah, when it comes to yard work, I generally don't like doing it. I prefer apartment lifestyle. I don't like shoveling, don't like yard work. But I remember when I was trying to sell my house, when I was trying to sell my house, I had to, you know, it was the first time where I actually kind of cared about the yard because I had to. And getting down on the ground and pulling the dandelions, I found weirdly satisfying. I don't know why, because it was like whack-a-mole. Every time you pull one out, it seems like there's a new one that's popped up. But I found that amusing, although I was so sore the next day because I had used parts of my leg muscles that I hadn't used in quite some time, and I could barely walk, so paid the price for that. Jeff Braun in for Sarah McCarthy today. Yep. What about you?
For me, it's any sort of spring cleaning wherein I get to concentrate on one room and go through all the stuff in it and throw a bunch of it away. Just decreasing weight from my apartment is my favorite thing. Just getting rid of, especially the closet, and then you can donate the clothes, of course, the ones that don't have holes in them, that sort of thing, and just whittling out all the stuff I'll never use again. That's very satisfying for me.
Yeah, And you've been like that as long as I've known you. This is like, does it require discipline?
You got to be in the right mood. You got to be in a very unsentimental mood where it's like, you know what? That was the last gift grandma ever gave me 15 years ago, but I never use it. So it's got to go. Sorry, grandma.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. Eventually. Yeah. You got to be ruthless at some times. You know what I mean? Like,
hey, you can't take it with you.
No, you can't.
And nobody else in your life cares or wants it, so get rid of it.
It's eventually going to get thrown into a bag and tossed. Exactly. I mean, you're keeping it for sentimental values, but there's certain things I think you need to. But like, my list of sentimental things gets shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter every single year.
I'm down to the Fabergé egg collection. I'll keep that. But that's it.
Do you find, Jeff, that you get anxious or a little unsettled if you start to see clutter pile up in any capacity?
Yeah, it's just the organized, you know, life, organized insides, you know what I mean? It soothes you and calms you, and then it makes you feel a little less soothed or calm when you do see it pile up like that. I can't handle it.
Yeah, that's fair. I find the trick for that is if you see it start to pile up, just let it pile up even further to the point where every time you look at it and think, I should clean that up, you're like, ah, that's too big of a mess.
Becomes a towering inferno staring at you, daggers every time you look at it.
That's what was nice about going to work from home during the pandemic was, is like, well, the dining room table is usually just where I put important papers until they're no longer important. And then needing it for office space forced me to clean it up and keep it clean for a couple of years. And I've been able to maintain that. So I'm proud about that.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. So we're asking you this morning for a chance to win either tickets for Star Wars A New Hope at the Centennial Concert Hall with the WSO on Friday, May 3rd. This is a hot ticket. It's sold out both nights. Totally sold out. We also have tickets for AEW, All Elite Wrestling, coming to Winnipeg on May the 1st at Canada Life Center. And we're asking you about the chores that you find oddly satisfying, like Lori. And I love this one from Lori because I have a follow-up tale to tell. Lori says, I love folding T-shirts. Folding them perfectly so the neckline is perfect, the sleeves are tucked exactly the same amount, so the end result is a neat little perfect square. And then Lori says, do you remember the contraption Sheldon had to fold his shirts on Big Bang Theory? I also bought one of those, and it's flip, 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 and perfectly folded T-shirt ensues. So I do both ways. Sometimes I wing it, other times I use the folder. It's only T-shirts I love folding, but it's oddly satisfying to get them just perfect. Lori adds, don't judge. No judgment here. I'm now, here's the thing. I am kind of between on the folding of the T-shirt because I'm actually pretty good at it just from working in retail.
Yep.
So it just ended up like folding stuff ended up being an acquired skill. So when I do fold the T-shirt, the problem is I expect perfection. Like, it has to be perfect. It can't just be, that's good enough, whatever. And if I don't get it perfect, then I redo it. And sometimes I'll fold the same T-shirt like five times.
Oh, Brett.
And then so there's a definite, like, a compulsive or whatever. There's an OCD thing there. And I refuse the folding board. I refuse the folding board so much that I took a part-time job at Bootlegger like 17 years ago, maybe 18. Because I was, you know, still relatively new here.
You missed folding T-shirts?
Well, no, I needed a second job. So I got a job at Bootlegger, and I was there. I was there for one day, and I was folding the T-shirts without the folding board.
Uh-huh.
And the manager said, you have to use the folding board. I'm like, but this is, come on, you can see it's pretty good. No, you got to use the folding board. So I quit. I'm like, I'm not using your stupid folding board.
Even though it probably made your life easier.
It didn't.
No?
Not really, because I was, because I.
Because you were that good.
Yeah, at the time I was. So I quit.
I'm learning a lot about you in the last 90 seconds or so. I'm surprised to hear this. T-shirts, you can only imagine how many T-shirts live in my house.
Yep.
When I went away two summers ago, when the boys and I drove to California, I got a phone call 3 days in from my wife, and she said, you are not allowed to buy three things on this trip. T-shirts, hoodies, and hats.
Yeah.
I said, Well, I already bought 3 t-shirts, so I won't buy any more t-shirts.
Do you use a folding board to fold them?
No, I'm pretty good at it as well. We have seminars and 2 things in my house, how to load the dishwasher and how to fold a t-shirt.
Attaboy!
Yep.
There you go. And if you look online, there's a trick where you can fold a t-shirt in like one fell swoop.
Oh, my buddy Scott does it. And it's pretty good, but it's not perfect enough for me.
Yeah, I've tried it. I couldn't quite stick the landing on that. But if you can figure it out, it's out there. That'll save you some time. It is Mackling and McGarry as we listen to some Cars. Great music, great song, make you happy on a Monday morning. Jim Toth joins us at 8:35 to talk sports. Monday sports wrap, big weekend for the Winnipeg Jets. So that's at 8:35. But right now we have a question for you. Is it a career or is it just a job?
Oh, it's an interesting question. As we continue our Future of Work series, CJOB's Skylar Peters takes a look at the growing group of young adults who are prioritizing lifestyle over job satisfaction and the businesses working to adapt to changing employee needs.
It's a crisp spring day at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg. Last week, you could have spotted shorts and t-shirts at this bus stop, but the cool air is back for the start of this mid-April week. The wind is whipping, and people here move with purpose, perhaps in a hurry to get away from the blustery elements, but it is April after all. Finals are here. It's time to lock in.
Who do we have here?
My name is Carson Ransom.
What do you do?
I'm currently a law student at Robson Hall Faculty of Law.
By now, Carson Ransom is used to the process. It's been more than a half decade of schooling to get to this point, and just a little over 1 year from now, he hopes to graduate with his law degree.
I have a couple family members that are lawyers, so then I just started taking a few, you know, law classes in undergrad, and I really enjoyed it, and so that kind of put me on the path, I think.
We spoke for half an hour, out of the cold, and away from the hustle of campus. I asked him what he looks forward to most about his future career.
I think intellectual stimulation, intellectual challenges are super important. I think there's also, you know, I'd be lying if I said that money wasn't a certain driver in some aspects, especially now, given how expensive, you know, the cost of living here is in Canada. I think you have to be very selective and the degrees you want to pursue.
And while Ransom says he'd still be on this path regardless of what the compensation was, he also observes his peers, and not everybody feels the same. David Bolton is with the HR firm Robert Half.
That's changed a little bit now. We're seeing that the number one factor for people looking for a new role is a higher salary.
Bolton says that compensation is pitted against another important factor.
But when we look at the people that actually are not willing to move, it's because 38% say they don't want to give up the flexibility they've got because they know they probably won't get that if they were to move to a new organization.
The workforce is at a crossroads, and that's where folks like Debbie Donato come in. She's the manager of career services at RRC Polytech, another Manitoba post-secondary located about 20 minutes up the road from the U of M. Her job isn't just about helping students. She's having similar conversations with employers all the time.
They come to us for kind of like the timing of when they should be recruiting and kind of what students are looking for, what should they be highlighting in their presentations.
Manitoba sports the lowest unemployment rate of all Canadian provinces at 4.5% in February. It's well under the national average of 5.8%. For employers in this province, the pressure is intense and the need to cater to their potential employees is predominant.
We have traditionally had 1 hour presentations where employers are presenting information about the company and then maybe a 10-15 minute Q&A with the students. It has done a flip. It's more of a 15-20 minute presentation and then just question and answer portion after that.
And that's something people like Bolton haven't seen, at least to this extent, in the past.
It feels like this is the most transformative period for sure. I think COVID-19 stimulated a number of changes.
Folks of law student Carson Ransom's vintage are definitely aware of that. And while the legal sector remains a demanding field, there's now a heightened focus on managing that.
You will burn out if you're grinding 24/7.
My question, can you succeed in the field if you're after the lifestyle it allows, and not necessarily the fulfillment the work brings?
I would say that's like a little bit of an internal dialogue I've had with myself. Yeah, I think it is possible in law, especially like a lot of type A personalities where they're, you have to be good with time management and planning.
Donato says some of the folks that come to her don't plan to pursue their passion, at least not as their 9-to-5.
I think the gig economy is still there, considering like a combination of that, like doing something that they love and then supplementing it with something that they can do on the side.
As a sports fan, Ransom's seen his favorite teams win championships, and he believes employers of all stripes can learn from the culture that general managers try to cultivate within a locker room.
It makes a huge difference when you can go to work every day and you don't mind having a 5-minute conversation at the coffee machine with your coworker. I think employers are definitely looking more into this now in the past. They're not just hiring on the characteristics that are make somebody a good worker, but it's more so what makes them a good person.
And as I watched hundreds of students hustle through the cold of that March day, I had no way of knowing if their footsteps are towards a path they truly wanted to go down. But it seems there's an understanding, through research and experience, that there's a path for them, whether they've found it or not. For Future of Work, I'm Skylar Peters.
Just enjoying that tune to exit the segment. The one thing I'll just say about a career versus job, before I got this job, I was a clock watcher at work, and I always said, I hope I never find myself in that position. You know, when you're at work and you're like, okay, how much time has passed? It feels like I've been here 45 minutes, and you look at the clock and 15 minutes have gone by in your first hour, and you're just watching the clock. Is it almost over? Is it almost over? Never. I mean, I'm always watching the clock here because it's part of our job.
It's a big part of what we do. The clock is always running in your head, of course, but I hear you loud and clear. I said something to somebody the other day about looking forward to Friday, and I'm like, but I'm not one of those people that lives for the weekend. I never want to be someone that lives for the weekend. That's part of the, once again, the gift of what we get to do, so loving what we do.
But before anything, Greg, I got to share this with you.
Okay.
I got to share this with you, what I just witnessed in the elevator. It was just a fun little moment where a couple of women were on the elevator asking each other, oh, how was your weekend? And this one woman, I don't know, in her 40s and her 50s, she says very sheepishly, oh, we went to that Down Under thing. You know, the male strippers. And they were quite good.
Like, yeah! Outstanding.
The Thunder from Down Under. They were at Club Region Event Center all weekend. So that just made me smile and put me in a much better mood as we continue through. Not that I was in a bad mood, but for a Monday, I'm feeling much happier now. That was fun.
Send your review, 204-780-6868.
Also, as we mentioned, Greg, at 9:05 and 9:35, we actually have a couple of, and we didn't plan it this way, it just sort of worked out this way.
That's right. Saturday, of course, so many of us were engaged with the Jets game, or maybe the Masters, or both, or other things, but I also know that people's social media was being dominated by the situation between Iran and Israel, as Iran launched up to, I think it was a combination of drones and missiles, upwards of 300 military-like objects towards Israel. The Iron Dome performed just almost as prescribed. We'll find out, what is the Iron Dome that protects Israel
Is this the beginning of action by Iran, or was this a warning shot, or in this case, 300 plus shots of warning to the West? And a Canadian hero will join us, Brett. We typically don't use that word unless it's warranted, but I would say our 9:35 guest fits the bill.
General Romeo Dallaire will join us. He has a new book out called The Peace, A Warrior's Journey, which guides readers on a crucial and inspiring journey from past wars through postmodern conflict toward a vision of lasting peace. So that's coming up at 9:35. But right now, it was, as you mentioned, GMAC, it was quite the sports weekend. Jets dismantle the Avalanche in Denver. The Coyotes are finally on the move. And Tiger finishes last after making the cut, but last at the Masters? Say it ain't so.
Jim Toth joins us now. We'll get through as many of these topics as we can with Jimmy. Good morning, JT.
Good morning, gentlemen. And little known fact, years ago when trying to make my way, I went to audition for Thunder Down Under, and they stopped me at the door and said, "You need to wake up, kid." And I was like, "Oh." And I'm like, "Is it because I'm not Australian?" And they said, "It has nothing at all to do with that. Just go a different path." And here I am.
Well, we're glad that you chose the path you did, Jim. And the Jets, 6-for-6 so far in April, 27 goals scored, 10 goals against. The Jets had never before scored 7 goals in a row in one game. They did that, of course, Saturday afternoon in Denver. And so much of their offense on Saturday, correct me if I'm wrong here, this is my view, Jim, came from terrific defense.
Yes, I agree with you. And I think that that's what they need to play like. It was alarming. I'm not going to kid you. I thought they could beat Colorado. They've beaten them twice already this year. And I thought they had a great opportunity, albeit in Denver, because the Avalanche are so good at home. But they did exactly what they needed to do. They came out with a good start. They got some goals right away. And what's impressed me the most in that game is they never took their foot off the gas. And this is a team that, as we've noticed, even when they were 0-5-1 prior to the 6-game winning streak, would have a period off, not just a couple minutes in a period, and try to get momentum back. They went at the Avalanche. They played strong defensively. The gaps were good, unlike what we saw during that 0-5-1 run. And those led to, goals came off turnovers, right? And when Colorado didn't protect the puck, the Jets took advantage. So I was highly impressed with it. I know, and I will say this, the Colorado Avalanche in the playoffs will not play that bad as they played on Saturday afternoon. But that being said, you have to worry about your own game at this time of the year. And everybody was concerned, and everybody was telling me and calling Jets at Noon and on social media that at 0-5-1, this team is going nowhere. Connor Hellebuck has only been a good regular season goalie, not a playoff one. The fact that they've done this and rattled off 6 wins in a row, but gone into Dallas, gone into Colorado with 2 different goalies and got back-to-back shutouts speaks to the defensive system that led to the offense. But this is what is going to win this team some rounds in the playoffs. They cannot get into a track meet. That's not what their bread and butter is. This is a team that at one point this year, after several months, was still the number one team at 5-on-5 play. And I thought that came to the forefront the last 2 games in Dallas and Colorado.
All right. So moving on then, we want to ask you this. If you have it, you likely celebrate it. If you don't, it's not a big deal. We're talking about home ice advantage. Does home ice mean anything in the playoffs?
It does, just in the fact that if you have a game 7, you would rather play it at home, right? So I think that the old adage is that no series is over until you lose on home ice or you get a win on the road. So this is going to be a tough series with Colorado, but to start in the whiteout, to start at home, I think the great thing about this is Colorado has been dominant at home this year, and the Jets have been very good on the road. They set a road record for wins this year for the franchise. So the fact that they could start at home, it's going to be a tough series. I don't think it means as much as it has in the past, to your point, Brett, but I do think that it matters in this case with the Winnipeg Jets and the Colorado Avalanche. I think that if they can get a win or two at home ice and go into a place where they've already won twice this year, I think that bodes well for them. But anytime you can play in front of your home fans, it's an advantage. How big of an advantage? I'm not going to sit here and say, well, they're so dominant at home, they'll never lose. That's not the case. But when you can start at home, get that extra rest. They're going to be at home for this last week against Seattle and Vancouver. To not get on a plane, to not have to go to Denver, is it going to factor into game one? A little bit, but not to the point where I think it affects the outcome. But it will propel them to get more rest, to get more prepared for this series that's coming up. They only need 1 point to make it happen, but I think it matters, but I just don't think it matters as much emphasis as some people think. It's just nice to be at home and give you that boost with your home crowd.
All right, you mentioned Connor Hellebuck, you mentioned goaltending. Hellebuck had his 37th career shutout, matching his jersey number on Saturday. Here is his save percentage in his last four starts. Obviously 1,000 on Saturday, 938 the start prior to that. That was in Nashville, 926, 939. That's a 950 saves percentage. The Jets have not one, but two goalies, I would argue, playing at the top of their game, Jim.
I'll say this, that if we look around the teams, Greg, that make the playoffs, if their starter goes down, I have concerns about everybody's backup. And I'm not saying we look at Vegas last year and Laurent Brossoit was the starter. He went down. Aiden Hill wins the Stanley Cup. It's not that it's not possible. But of all the teams making the playoffs this year, if the starter goes down, I'm concerned about every one of them except for the Jets. I think Laurent Brossoit can play just as good as Connor Hellebuck. That being said, and I have to say this because I love all opinions. I love if we don't agree and we can debate it. But the people who constantly look at Connor Hellebuck, I constantly say when the team plays their system in front of him, he is as good as anybody in the league. There are people this season who want to put a little bit of blame during that 0-5-1 run on Connor Hellebuck. He could have been better for sure, but the team in front of him need to be better. People in this town, some of them, are going to complain about Connor Hellebuck as he's going into the Hockey Hall of Fame. He is on a surefire path to be a Hall of Famer. I don't want to jinx anything. He's got 8 more years coming up. But when you see, and those numbers that indicate it, when this team plays the right way in front of him, he's very unstoppable. And I think that he's the best goalie in the National Hockey League right now. I'm not a homer. I'm not from Winnipeg. I didn't grow up cheering for the Jets. But you're going to have to argue for hours with me to tell me who's a better goalie right now in the National Hockey League.
All right, Jim, we only got a couple of minutes left here, so why don't we jump to the Coyotes? They're on the move to Utah, sort of. What can you tell us?
Well, I mean, it looks like this is going to happen. I don't have any more insight than anybody else, but the further gong show of the Coyotes took place in Edmonton on the weekend when it was reported the owner or the GM or whoever went to Edmonton to tell the players that they're going to be in Salt Lake City next year. I think that's a horrible thing to do while the season is still going on. I think it's an even worse thing to do to tell them before a game. Now, they went on to win that game against the Oilers. But I do think that this is, I don't know if it's the right move because Utah kind of came out of nowhere this year, but it just isn't working. We've talked about this to death over the years at Jets at Noon as well, guys, but the Arizona situation has come to the point where they are literally waiting on a land auction. They literally have to win an auction to know if they could possibly have a better stadium to play in other than the college arena that seats 4,500. That's not a lot of security and sustainability when you have a pro franchise to wait on winning a land auction. So it looks like they're going to be going to Utah. It looks like the door is open to go back to Arizona, and it has everything to do with the amount of people that are in the state of Arizona and the city of Phoenix that the NHL wants to be in that market. But it looks to me like players and players' families are being told that, you know, spend your summer finding a place in Salt Lake City because this is happening. So I don't know if it's good or bad. I just think it's kind of good in a positive way to end what's going on in Arizona for those players and their families.
The guy we sort of expected to win the Masters, Scottie Scheffler, did. And Tiger Woods, I guess technically not last because there were a bunch of players, half the players didn't make the cut. But in terms of the players that make the cut, he was last, yes, on Sunday. Bizarre.
Yeah, you know, guys, I'm kind of torn with this because I am a Tiger fan. And I'm glued to every time he watches it. I still think, and Cam Poitras and I were talking about this last week, I think the 2019 Master win by Tiger Woods, any team or athlete comeback story, that is the greatest. That is the greatest return to prominence story I have ever witnessed in the history of all sports, and I'll stand by it. What his body has gone through, how banged up he was, what his personal life was like, the car, everything that went into everything around him coming back and winning one more Masters at that stage of his career is the greatest comeback I've ever seen an athlete do, in my opinion, for 4 days and win that thing, where he was in his career and how his body was working. That being said, I feel terrible. I can't wait to watch him every week or every time he's in an event, especially at the Masters. And then I'm watching and I'm like, I just feel terrible for wanting to watch this. He can barely walk up and down the elevations of Augusta. He's still as good as ever in the mind and how he reads the course and what he's trying to do. But it's just clear as day that golf is not his friend anymore. And it's a struggle to watch him struggle because it looks like he's in a lot of pain to play something he loves. So I love watching him play. I wasn't surprised he finished that bad. But as I watched over the weekend, I was watching a lot Sunday morning of him trying to get around with that college amateur. And I thought, what a thrill for that guy. But just the difficulty it is to watch him perform right now is really tough, given the fact that his body is just totally letting him down.
Jim Toth is co-host of Jets at Noon alongside Cam Poitras and is the host of the Jim Toth Show weekdays 1 to 3 on 680 CJOB. Mr. Toth, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great week. Always a pleasure.
Or you could call it the Jim Toth Thunder Dome. Based on what he was saying earlier?
Yeah. I was trying to figure out where you're going with that. I like that. I don't believe for one second he was turned away at the door. I think he got further than that.
8:49. Let's check traffic and weather in 3 minutes on 680 CJOB. It is Mackling and McGarry. We're giving away tickets for Star Wars in concert with the WSO on May 3rd. Or that's a sold-out show, by the way. Or tickets for AEW, Oddly Satisfying Chores. And this is our precursor runner-up. So the runner-up will get one prize. The winner gets to choose a prize. The precursor runner-up says, I love washing dishes by hand. I do not have a dishwasher. I will never own a dishwasher. I love washing dishes and other people's houses after they've had me over for supper.
Wow.
I just love kitchen cleanup. When I was a little kid, I was always in the kitchen with my grandma. They washed dishes after every meal. It was always chat time with CJOB playing from the old radio on top of the fridge. Doing the dishes was always a happy time. Now, like you said, it's relaxing, almost meditative. For me, it's also one plate, one bowl, one fork. I just rinse and I use the same dish over and over and over again. Have a great day. I have a dishwasher. I never use it. Partly because it would take too long for me to fill it. I don't have enough stuff to fill it. But I also find doing the dishes kind of relaxing, too.
That reminds me, I have dishes for you in my storage room. I got to bring those to you.
Okay.
but also, you know, I'm clearly in these households, yours included, Brett, you don't get up in the middle of the night to absolute, you know, disaster of pots and pans. Teenagers cooking in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
So dishwasher's mandatory in our house. That's a long way around there. Sorry, pal.
Normand, this one it comes with a painful surprise, so a warning for that. G-Mac, why don't you read it? Because you kicked it off with your pressure washer.
All right. After a weekend motorcycle camping trip, I went to Henry's Car Wash in Transcona to bring the bike back to showroom condition. But it couldn't peel the bugs off of the headlight. I used a chamois in one hand and the power washer in the other and proceeded to peel all the skin off the inside of my arm.
Ouch.
It was oddly instantaneously dissatisfying, but I finished cleaning the bike, which made it all worth it before getting medical attention. He finished the bike, of course, one job done right at a time. Didn't hurt much. A lot of stinging. Took a long time to heal. I haven't made that mistake again. I still have that motorcycle, 1979 Honda 750K. It's in better shape than me.
Norman, that's a good one. But Megan F. is our winner, who says, I got a pretty late diagnosis for ADHD when I was 32. Because of that, I've got a lifetime of workarounds that have become very integrated into who I am. There is nothing, and I mean nothing, more satisfying than making a room or a cupboard or a drawer as absolutely efficient as it possibly can be. If I don't have a very specific place for a thing, where that thing is, the only thing that fits there, I can and will forget the thing exists, and I absolutely forget where it goes. You can imagine the ridiculous problems that ensue. So, sure, it's a chore to pull absolutely everything out of your Tupperware cupboard and meticulously place and organize all the types of lids into a rack that hangs off the door that's exactly the right size, but the complete and absolute satisfaction of having a perfect little home for all your things that you made specifically for it is fantastic.
Beautiful.
Megan, you've inspired me to add, organize my cabinets, to put that on the maybe pile instead of the never pile.
It's moving up. It's progress.
Megan wins, gets to pick Star Wars in concert or AEW. Our question of the day, by the way, we're in the process of updating at cjob.com. How do you view your job? Just a job, or it's a career? Inspired by the very question that Skylar Peters was asking in his Future of Work piece that we ran at 8:05. Is it just a job, or is it a career? So you'll be able to cast your vote on that at cjob.com. And we'll hear from Hal Anderson in our next segment to tee up what's coming up on Connecting Winnipeg. Right now, we've got a new book to tell you about. We want to share some of the praise for this book. Here's one example. The Peace is a probing and heartfelt account of a man's ceaseless search for new ways to promote peaceful change, revealing a profound and inspiring humanity. Here's another one. Here is the wisdom of a true elder, one who has struggled to be free in the horror and beauty of what he has come to know in his hard-lived life. In his freedom, he has chosen the good. And here is his guide.
The full title of the book is The Peace, A Warrior's Journey. The author is General Romeo Dallaire. Mr. Dallaire, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Pardon me. I thought I saw him call in. He hasn't called in yet. So
okay.
I walked us both right into that. Sorry about that. But we are hoping to speak with General Romeo Dallaire. He did call in a few moments ago. I see him. He's calling in now. General Dallaire, good morning.
How are you?
We're doing great. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, fine.
We appreciate you taking the time, and what an honor it is to speak to a true hero. We use that word a little bit loosely in our society, General Dallaire, but I would say that there's no question that you're worthy of that moniker. So tell us about this book, and tell us about why you decided to write it.
I've written three books so far, previous to this. One was on the commander's operational perceptions of what happened in Rwanda, which is Shake Hands with the Devil. And then I looked at the tactical situation where soldiers were facing child soldiers and the moral and ethical impacts of that, and that was the fight like soldiers, they die like children. Then I wrote the book, Waiting for First Light, because I wanted to write to the veterans who are suffering from PTSD and moral injuries that I was. And so that one was very personal. This one is a strategic sort of book. That is to say, it's a bit of a guide or a focus on what we've been into since many centuries, what we're still into, and where I believe we can move forward into the future.
By the way, General Dallaire, you sound just a touch muddled. I'm wondering if it's just the way you're holding your phone, if that just needs an adjustment. But, you know, one of the reviews that we read for this book pointed to how you chose the good, how you struggled to be free in the horror of beauty of what you've come to know in your hard-lived life, and in your freedom you've chosen the good, and here is his guide. So with the things that you have seen throughout your life, is it difficult to make that choice to choose the good?
It in fact came from the fact that I don't
I wasn't getting the feeling that we were getting out of the horrors of hell, that in fact we were repeating it. And the lessons we were learning from past catastrophes were simply being repeated by the same political elites with the same sort of terms, with the same sort of idea that maybe we'll be able to make a truce when all these conflicts are happening and buy time for things to calm down, and hopefully it wouldn't restart. Well, we've seen over the last 20, nearly 30 years, that many of the truces, many of the conflicts that were stopped by truces are simply restarted again. So we've not only not solved many of the problems, we haven't prevented many of the problems that come from the frictions of our differences, but on top of that, we've gotten even more catastrophic, is that we know better, but we're not applying anything new because we're fearful of the political sort of ramifications, and we're dominated by self-interest. And we're even going so far as using children as instruments of war. So, yeah, you could really turn negative, or you could project us into the future, although it may take decades, if not a couple centuries, into how we might be able to crack this code. And that's what broke the whole exercise. Is one, I fell in love and discovered that, in fact, love is a dominating factor. And two, we can. It's with the more women being very much involved in the whole construct of our institutions and our structures and our solutions. And two, that the young millenniums, the generation without borders, become more activists and, in fact, push the older generations to get on with it. Well, on the first side, you're absolutely right. Is that these catastrophic failures that we're watching are enough to throw us completely off the possibility that we could get out of this hell, or even out of these purgatories where we try to make these little truces that hopefully will last, because the whole construct of the world is based on this male-dominated hubris and ego and male paternalistic leadership and philosophy of life that has not integrated women to the extent where we can create a new reference. And so I'm pushing that the idea that, just like in the Renaissance, we are on the edge of a revolutionary era in which women are going to move in significantly to change the philosophies and adjust with men to a new philosophy of the future of humanity. And two, the young people are going to want to implement it through technology and the ability to see the communion that can happen between the planet and humanity and push us into peace. And so those elements, those two near-revolutionary thoughts and ideas and desires by humanity, I believe, is going to crack the code.
Our guest is General Romeo Dallaire. He's written a new book. It's called The Peace, A Warrior's Journey. And you touched on it earlier. You mentioned post-traumatic stress disorder. We actually had a discussion a couple of hours ago with PTSD for Winnipeg firefighters. So when it comes to PTSD for veterans, we're wondering, can you just sort of talk about the impact that PTSD has on both veterans and their families?
Well, in fact, the work that I've been doing has moved from Wounded Warriors Canada as their patron, has moved not only with the veterans, which we launched research out of Queens and RMC, but in fact have also now moved with energy into all the first responders, and we're even working now with first responders of the Aboriginal communities. And so
the impact of these complex and ambiguous missions, where we see the horrors of humanity going beyond description, have created, PTSD, which is often punctual by certain circumstances that we see, an even deeper injury, and that is the moral injury. I mean, when you're forced to have to shoot children to protect others, it creates a fundamental attack on every fiber of your being. And in so doing, the injury that that causes is catastrophic if it's not taken care of with the same sense of urgency as we take care of physical injuries. And so families that live in that context without any help, ultimately we see to the extent that even teenagers can't live in that sort of up and down horror scenario of one of the members never being in any stable state, and they are even committing suicide. So as an example, my wife has worked 25 years in the Valkarchi Family Support Center, where they have moved extensively to bring the families in, and she was able to change the policy of the Canadian government, defense policy in 17, that families are now integral to the operational capability of the forces and not in support, which changes their priority of effort.
I can't even imagine. I know what was going through my head on Saturday when Iran launched those drones and those missiles toward Israel. As a father of two boys who are about to turn 18, General, I often think about whether or not these world conflicts will get to a point where they're called to service, and it makes me sick to my stomach to imagine that happening. And then I remember that there are children all over this planet who are forced to take up arms for a cause that they may or may not believe in.
There are so many causes, and you see it in Ukraine. You're going to see, and we've seen it in Gaza, that what we have brought to the youth and the children of these countries is not only an engagement, some of them directly into the fight, but also in support of the fight. And we have shown them what genocide is. We have shown them the extreme that with which politicians and male-dominated societies have pushed their societies to the extent that ultimately we're creating generational wars, because these kids are just going to turn into the same scenario and continue this fight. So you might want to destroy Hamas today, but my God, you've created generations of continuum generational wars for a long time to come, because fundamentally, nobody's talking peace. They're just talking about, defend ourselves, defend our borders. Well, we're going to a world without borders, and these guys are in the wrong, wrong era, and they got to shift into an era where, in fact, respect of human beings as all being equal is fundamental, including women being equal, is fundamental to the state of humanity in the future.
Well, we thank you very much for the time, General Dallaire. We appreciate this, and we look forward. I know there's a book launch that was scheduled for April 20th at McNally Robinson. That's in the process of being rescheduled. So thank you so much for this time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, say hi to the people in Shiloh for me. Thank you very much.
Will do. Yeah. General Romeo Dallaire joining us live once again. The new book is called The Peace, A Warrior's Journey.